Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everybody. I do like my new applause button. Welcome to another reality show where we are opening hearts and minds and, you know, we're even opening cans of tuna if that's what it takes. But I'm really, really excited about tonight's show. It's going to be a great night. It's going to be a great show. I have one of my frequent guests who's also a very dear and close friend of mine, Mr. Phil Imbrogno. With his latest book, we're going to be discussing Files from the Edge, a paranormal investigator's exploration into high strangeness. Welcome to the show, Phil.
Thank you, Goldie.
You're so welcome. I was so excited when you told me the book was out, and, you know, not just because there's some strangeness that Goldie contributed, but because
not just ordinary strangeness, high strangeness.
You got to do it. I mean, I have many friends who are commenting on it. It's exactly what they, not ordinary strangeness, high strangeness. And I'm like, you read the book, though, and it really is strangeness on many levels. I mean, I definitely want to, you know, let's share some of these stories because they're, I think the fact that you're an author and a scientist is what I really enjoy about reading your books, because you don't, you know, it's not that you don't want to say they don't exist, but there's really a very structured, you know, situation that the way you take the information in before you just accept it to be high strangeness. Is that the right way to put that? Did I say that correctly?
Yeah, well, you know, I look at most of the cases as, especially the ones that are high strangeness, incredibly bizarre, as, well, you know, these, the people that I talked to, I mean, I have so many cases in my files, and some of them I don't even bother with, but there are certain cases where, you know, are so bizarre, and the people actually believe it's the truth, you know
right.
what I'm saying?
So do you believe it's a personal thing, in other words?
Yeah, you know, I can't say whether or not they had real experiences, but they are definitely not lying. They are definitely not fabricating something. They actually believe that these experiences happened to them.
Okay.
And whether they're real or not, I mean, you know, is academic. The fact is there are so many people having these experiences
right.
is that even if they're not true, you know, we have to get to the bottom to it. Is it really happening, or is it some type of psychosis of the 21st century? You know, I mean,
I don't think I've ever heard it worded like that, but the psychosis of the, because, it, well, indeed, because, you know, you get to a point where if enough people, well, I mean, let's take, you know, even when you, Night Siege, when was Night Siege written?
Well, Night Siege was published in 1986.
So,
and that was after, you know, the UFO sightings in the Hudson Valley, and well, Night Siege is a different, is a horse of a different color, because it's the actual documentation of very credible people whose testimonies would not be questioned in a court of law, that had an incredible experience with an object that they thought was not part of this reality or this planet. Now, during the investigation in Night Siege, we had hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of witnesses on file with their testimonies typed up. But for the book, we only selected those witnesses whose credentials and reputations would not be questioned by anybody. People really who never really had any interest in UFOs or the paranormal before their experience. I mean, in Night Siege, there's loads of statements from police officers,
right.
scientists, and, you know, teachers, and you know, executives, you know, running major corporations, lawyers, doctors, I mean, and just, you know, pilots and just solid individuals of the community, including, you know, people who are members of the local, you know, government in that area. So
right.
these are people who say, yes, I saw something strange. People who would think twice before they would run to a police station or a radio station or a UFO investigator, to claim that they saw something that they felt was, you know, unconventional and not part of this world.
Right. Now, okay, so with that being said, how would you classify the people who contributed to Files from the Edge?
Well, you know, it's the fact is they also had encounters.
Right.
But, you know, most of them are lone witnesses. And
there's a couple of couples, though, where they were driving.
Yeah, well, yeah, there's, you know, a couple of witnesses. But, you know, unlike, you know, Night Siege and Hudson Valley UFO sightings, the sightings are corroborated by thousands and hundreds and dozens
right.
of people who saw the object that night, not just people who were together. There were independent witnesses who saw these things. In some of the cases and Files from the Edge, especially the ones that are contact cases, you know, you have, you know, a lone person involved, the center of the attention.
Right.
And, you
right.
know, that's not to say that I don't believe that they had true experiences. I'm just saying that, you know, unlike the Hudson Valley case, which is proof enough with the number of witnesses, in these cases, the only evidence that we have, that I have, that these people had these experiences is their word.
Right, right. No, okay, and that, so it's a horse of a different breed because it's still the paranormal, it's still the high strangeness per se, but this is not thousands on one case, but basically hundreds on individual hundreds of cases.
Well, Night Siege is, you know, just a bunch of UFO sightings. I mean, you know,
right.
and today,
right.
you know, back in the 80s, UFOs were hard enough to believe, but today a UFO encounter is like, oh, 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 you know, here goes another one, and it's not considered that strange anymore. So it's not considered a strange event anymore because people are having so many sightings. I mean, look at what happened over in the last, you know, 5, 6, 7 years with the sightings in Chicago and Texas.
Mexico.
In Arizona. In Mexico. I mean, so, you know, UFOs are becoming a common sight once again in the skies. And UFO encounters are considered more believable now than they've ever been, especially back in the 80s when Night Siege was published. But they are strange encounters, but, you know, there are cases of encounters with the paranormal that are much stranger. So I label them as being high strangeness.
Oh, okay. Is that what the definition, that's where that comes from?
Well, the definition was actually invented by Dr. J. Allen Hynek.
Okay.
And Dr. J. Allen Hynek, of course, was, you know, the foremost authority on UFOs and my mentor. And he was the co-author with me with Night Siege.
Okay.
He noticed while investigating UFOs, you know, there were more things going on than ordinary UFO sightings. So he didn't know how to label these cases because they didn't fit into his categories. So he made a special category to put these cases. And at the time, they consisted of people who claimed, you know, contact and abduction. And he called them high strangeness.
Okay.
And so that, you know, that category, that terminology has carried now into the study of not only UFOs, but the complete paranormal.
Okay, I think it's quite apropos, personally. So.
Well, yeah, I think so too.
Yeah, it certainly. Because I do want to share. Because I wrote in part of my little write up that I put on Facebook tonight for our episode tonight. I was at the park today with, you know, my nanny kids, and a gentleman on a bicycle, you know, was riding around the parking lot, and all of a sudden he said at one point, he goes, I was noticing the signs, I have magnets on the side of my car advertising another reality show. And so he goes, I was noticing your signs. And I was like, oh, you know, that's fabulous. I was like, have you ever heard the show? And he goes, the name kind of sounds familiar. And I was like, well, you know, it's Thursday. I said, and actually, I said, I'm going to have Phil Imbrogno on tonight. I said, who is, you know, he's kind of, you know, he's local. This is a gentleman that speaks of the Hudson Valley, you know, Files from the Edge. A lot of the talk and situations are from, you know, the basic New York, Connecticut kind of area. So I was like, you know, you should, you know, feel free to check it out because he's, you know, kind of a local hero and local star. And he was like, you know, he goes, yeah, he goes, this sounds kind of like a guy who wrote Night Siege. I go, well, that's because it is the guy who wrote Night Siege. And he went, really? And I went, really? And I gave him a card, and I said, because he told me he was one of the people who for 2 hours followed the UFO that night. And I said, listen, we are definitely talking about high strangeness tonight and all things paranormal. So I welcomed him to call in and speak with you. And if he does, I just thought that was kind of like interesting, you know, just out of the blue, that whole conversation would take place on the day that the show was going to air. For me, that always feels kind of, you know, mild strangeness. It just feels like there's an electricity about what the things that we're talking about and people. Because I think what's happening, I like the way you said, you know, either these things are happening or we're having, you know, a complete psychosis of the whole human race, which is, I think there are some people that really do believe they're going crazy and they're having, you know, some sort of personal experiences because their mind and their belief is going, it can't be true, so I must be going crazy in order to be having some sort of this experience.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, some people do think they're going crazy and they don't know if it's reality or not. And unfortunately, some of them actually tell their loved ones and their relatives and people who are close to them and their friends, and they start shying away from them like they got leprosy. And,
right.
You know, and usually, you know, a family member will force this person to go and see a psychiatrist who says, well, same story over and over again. He's trying to escape reality, getting depressed, so he's creating a new fantasy to escape his life that he doesn't like. Let's put him on drugs.
Yeah, huh.
So, you know,
well, it's funny because we don't lock up people anymore. Now we imprison them through drugs. Right.
I mean,
right.
If some of these people really get, you know, fanatic-like and almost, you know, they get so involved, they start losing, you know, their
grasp,
their concept of their normal life and this other reality, this paranormal reality that's become their life starts to control their life. So,
right.
Obviously, if you're married or, you know, and you're a family person, your spouse or your loved one, whoever it is going to be concerned and get you to see a doctor, and the doctor's going to say, let's hospitalize this person.
Right.
Now, and they put you, of course, in a rest home, which are, you know, they're called rest home rehabilitation homes, which were, you know, in the old days they were called mental institutions and sanitariums.
Right.
But think about this. Some of these people may have actually been contacted by maybe an extraterrestrial intelligence or an interdimensional intelligence, and they may have actually been chosen as liaisons or ambassadors to act as an in-between their world and ours.
Right.
How many of our mental institutions are filled with our ambassadors to the future in contact with an intelligence from another place?
Did you ever see the movie K-Pax?
Yeah,
with Kevin Spacey?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of what I think the premise of that movie was, is that truly he's crazy.
Took over his body. That's why.
Well, indeed, but, I mean, it was interesting that he would land in, you know, I forget, wasn't he in the famous one in New York City? I can't think of the name right now.
Well, Bellevue?
Bellevue. That's where I believe he ended up, in Bellevue.
Well, that's where they... Bellevue is actually filled with UFO contactees.
Well, which is exactly what you're just saying. That's
yeah.
And I'm
mental institutions may be filled with our ambassadors of a future first contact with another intelligence.
Well, and I mean, do you feel that the consciousness is starting to at least show signs where it's becoming able to more readily accept that, you know, just because something, you know, can't be measured with our instruments, that it can still be real?
I think for the most part, people are starting to accept the idea. I mean, if you look at the progress that, you know, the how people have changed when they look at the paranormal, which includes UFOs, from the 70s, the late 70s, you see a definite evolving of the human conscious of the general public to accept more that these things are real. Why? Because if they're not having experiences, everybody knows someone who's had some type of paranormal experience, and they believe this person to be very stable and ordinary and so on and so on.
Sure.
And so more people are accepting the idea that this is real.
Right.
Yes, there's an evolution in the consciousness to be more open-minded. Obviously, if you talked about this stuff back in the 50s and the 60s, you were ridiculed.
Well, and I believe you were actually potentially locked up at that point. You know, they could come and set the white coats,
To a certain degree. But you have to remember also that, especially during the UFO situation in the 50s and the 60s, is that, you know, the United States, some aspect of the United States government actually, you know, they actually train people to go out and tell these outrageous stories about having sex with aliens from Venus and so on. And these are the people who got the attention of the media. So when people looked at these things on TV, talk shows and so on back then, or heard them on the radio, people started laughing at the whole thing, and they don't want to be a part of it because it's full of nuts.
You mean so they're intentionally planting that is what you're saying?
Oh, yeah. I mean, they had somebody back in the 60s called around, you know, Andy the Mystic Barber, who claims to give haircuts to aliens. They come down and they land in their flying saucers in his backyard.
Okay.
And they used to come into his barber shop, and he used to go on all the talk shows. Then there was Spaceship Ruthie, who claimed to be from another galaxy, and she would come into these places with antennas coming out of her head. Of course, you know, they were just, you know, with a band
little,
up there.
Right,
but these
right.
are the people who got on TV,
right.
you see, on shows back in the 60s, like the Joe Pyne Show, the Alan Burke Show. These were like top TV talk shows. And
right.
The host constantly, for an hour, just ridiculed these people, and they just took it and smiled and continued with their stories. And, of course, the audience got a big kick out of it. The viewers got a big kick out of it. But it made UFOs, and especially the paranormal, look so ridiculous that people would not even think about talking about it, even if they had an experience that they thought was real.
So it was a form of mind control, no?
Well, it was a form of conditioning.
Okay, that's a better word.
Oh, yeah.
Meaning,
I'm sure all of these people were
programmed. Were planned.
They were planned.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Then some.
But nonetheless, it kept the legitimate people fearful about exposing them.
Talking about their encounter, yeah.
Of course. Right. Right.
See how it works?
Yeah, no, God bless the government.
You
know, if they don't want information out, they know how to do it on all angles, boy.
Yeah, but you don't see too much of that anymore. You don't see hardly see that anymore. And,
well,
you know, the stories just have become more sophisticated. But
now, did you hear that? Because I have actually seen somewhere online that by law, or there is a law that if you've been abducted, you have to report that to a government or to our government because you have to get scanned or something?
Oh,
have you ever heard of that?
I never heard about that. The government or any agency in the government would not admit that, you know, UFO abductions are
legitimate. Right.
Yeah. For example, back in the 80s, an attorney by the name of Peter Gersten tried to, you know, pin down the FBI by saying people are claiming to be abducted. It doesn't matter if they're abducted by aliens or, you know, aliens from Colombia or wherever else, you know, or
right.
Mexico or Canada.
Right.
You know, people are claiming that they're being abducted and they're disappearing for a while, and their relatives have noted that they disappeared. If this is an abduction experience, and the FBI should be investigating, yet, you know, of course, the FBI, you know, would not even touch these cases.
Well, who were the men in black? What form of government, three letters, so to speak, were they under? Because there was an agency, no, who did the Blue Book and all that stuff?
Yeah, but the Blue Book was just a a gathering information office with the Air Force. And it ended in 1969. It started in 1951, 1952, and ended in 1969. And Dr. Hynek, who I was very close to, was a scientific consultant for Project Blue Book. And he said the people in there didn't even really care about UFOs. They put people in there who were just like getting ready to retire. They changed hands. You know, there was a kind of rotation quite a bit. And Project Blue Book was only four people, plus him as scientific consultant. And that reports that came in were very rarely investigated. And reports that came in that involved military encounters were channeled through intelligence agencies to deal with. But he said that everybody accused Project Blue Book of being a cover-up. Dr. Hynek would say that he told me that Project Blue Book is not a cover-up. There was no cover-up there. He said it was a foul-up.
Meaning?
Like, it was a foul-up. The people in there kept that they didn't care as to what was happening. The reports just came in, and they just threw them in the file cabinets ripped them up and told the public that they were investigating UFOs. It was just a front by the U.S. Air Force to have a front to the media indicating that the Air Force was investigating these things because Congress wanted them to investigate these things. But reports that came in that were serious reports, especially made by police officers and pilots and military personnel near sensitive areas, were channeled to the CIA.
Okay.
So the people at Project Blue Book, you know, really didn't know or
didn't
care.
Really see the juicy stuff. Okay.
No, they didn't care. They saw it, but they didn't care.
How
like
do you not care? Counterintuitive.
Well, most of them, the commanders there, and the Air Force commander there, you know, the people that went there were either getting ready for retirement, and they had jobs, you know. And Dr. Hynek said they had no interest in UFOs whatsoever. They were just doing channeling reports to different agencies, and any reports that came in from, like, individual civilians and stuff, they would just, you know, throw in a file cabinet.
Well, okay, if that was the case back then, is there a institute or is there a branch that cares today?
Nobody knows. I mean, nobody really knows. There's all kinds of stories, and, you know, people, you know, in the UFO fields, you know, think they got all the information and they make these fake documents and they publish them on the Internet. And,
right.
I mean, you know.
God bless the Internet.
It's just a matter of, you know, who you want to believe. Is there a government cover-up or not? I believe that there are agencies within the government or one particular branch of the intelligence agencies that are dealing with not only UFOs but paranormal phenomena, psychic phenomena, and also other things like, you know, like outlandish physics.
Like the remote viewing kind of thing?
No, like, you know, like a Stargate program.
Oh, okay. So do you believe that comes from, there is some fact to that whole, you know, I always say art is always imitating life somewhere.
Yeah, well, you know, you could talk about the MIBs before, the Men in Black.
Right.
I don't know who or what they're from, but I've actually had encounters with, I would consider they were, could be called Men in Black.
I think you spoke about them in the book. Weren't they part of the...
one book. Contact.
Files from the Edge? No.
No, not Files from the Edge. Contact of the Fifth Kind, which, by the way, is a new version of Contact of the Fifth Kind, is coming out in December, called Ultra-Terrestrial Contacts.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, we'll have you on when that comes out. Okay. So back to this. Okay. So, we really don't know if the government. I would think that because did you see or hear about the new movie Men Who Stare at Goats?
Yeah, I heard about it.
You didn't see it though.
Real program. No, I didn't.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I mean, that I get the feeling that clearly, the whole idea of remote viewing, you know, because it seems like the government would always want their hands on something that would give them the upper hand in weapons or in war, in military, for whatever the reason, our government never really seemed to care about things like education and medical and, you know, any kind of advancements from that perspective. It always seemed to be, you know, the military and the might versus right kind of thing.
The military's always looking for weapons and things. But I want to know one thing. What is it with goats? For example, you know, what is it with goats? During the testing of the atomic bomb, they got goats and they tied them in front of the atomic bombs to see what effect the radiation would have on them while all the humans were down in insulated, protective lead bunkers. And now, and then later on, these people are staring at goats to kill them.
I think that's where the movie came from. I think that was the principle.
I mean, what is it with the goats? The government, I mean, we pick on goats. Why aren't they using cows or dogs?
Well, I guess they didn't, you know. I don't know. Why aren't they using government officials? Personally, you want to test these things, get your own butts out there and be tested
well,
on.
They
I mean,
probably did. They probably did test them on humans, too.
Well, then we would get into the movie V for Vendetta, you know, that whole idea that, indeed, they were testing on humans. I mean, you know, I don't believe Hitler, in all honesty, was the only one testing on humans. Well, there was also stories about them testing the whole LSD. I've seen things on the History Channel.
So why would they stop there?
I truly believe they just rationalize everything that it's okay for them to do these things. But I don't want to get into a bashing of the government as much as I want to get into the book. I mean, the book has amazing, amazing stories.
I don't even know
where to start. It was once again a book I just couldn't put down. I just kept reading, and you know, I mean, there are stories about, you know, UFOs, people losing time, but there's also stories about, you know, the chamber on 301 where the gentleman got just knocked over by a force.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's like, I mean, I think people, you know, they get a sense like you can walk into a place and when the hair in the back of your neck stands up, you know, truly, how do you explain things like that? You know, because I think the body reacts to a certain consciousness or frequency or whatever you want to term it, even if the mind doesn't have a definition or, you know, doesn't really have anything, you know, the five senses aren't, or, you know, you can't see it, you can't hear it. But by golly, when the hairs on the back of your neck are standing up, you know, the first thing you want to do is get out.
Yeah, so people have physiological reactions to paranormal phenomena before it happens. People feel uneasy. They feel like ants are crawling all over their body. They feel a chill in their body.
Yeah.
They start shivering. They just feel that something's watching them. They feel another presence.
Yeah.
You see, so there's a physiological reaction that the body gives and probably the mind before the event takes place. And the bad feelings and the shivering and the feeling, the hair standing up on the back of the neck and so on, all these things that have been described may happen a few days before the actual paranormal experience takes place.
Huh. How do you explain that?
Well, if we look into the fact that there's an intelligence or an entity behind this that's doing it and maybe stalking the person for a while, checking them out before it actually appears and manifests in some different form.
Wow. Right, because one of the things I was definitely seeing as a thread, and even just from my own experiences, it is very important, in my belief anyways, that when you're dealing with anything paranormal or unexplained, to keep a sense of center. You know, like, I mean, I know when we were at Hawk Rock and I leapt into your lap after that animal or shapeshift. You know, after the being, for lack of, you know, we don't really know what it was, after it made that sound, you know, you get, fear comes about, but I believe if you stay in a level of fear, you're much more vulnerable to things happening against your will than if you just command a sense of presence that even though there's a sense you can't do anything about it, there is a sense that you can protect yourself through the I am presence. I mean, for lack of a better word, I'm not trying to go God on you or anything. It's just, I don't know what else to call it. And, you know, I remember having that experience with the, you know, when I went on the ship, you know, and that night on the Hawk Rock, it was like, once I was sitting next to you, for whatever the reason, however it made it, I just felt safe, and then I relaxed. So it wasn't, I think it's important that when people, and I got that sense in the book that people, they were frightened, but it's like, you gotta pull it together, because if you give the control away of self through fear, I personally find it to be, I was more vulnerable when I give that edge away.
Of course, because what you're doing is you're giving up your energy through fear, your spirit through fear, and you have to keep that energy and keep it centered.
Right.
And because, you know, many of this phenomena, some of it, you know, feeds on the fear.
Right.
And it gets stronger. So the more fearful that you get, the more trouble you're in. So controlling your fear is actually a very hard thing to do sometimes. It's easier said than done.
Absolutely.
But then again, you see, people show fear because they don't understand or they don't recognize what's happening. It's something unknown. But once you begin to understand this and see that it's not something that's really supernatural, that, you know, you lose your fear of it because you do understand it and you're willing and ready to deal with it, you know, more in your control. You don't lose control to whatever is trying to control you.
I agree wholeheartedly. The pioneers who have been studying these things, or even not just the pioneer, you know, like even there's a show called The Ghost Whisperer. I have learned so much about, you know, the astral plane, the people who die that still stay around the earth. And a lot of it that I got from, you know, this woman's accounts, which I believe are, you know, pretty accurate to the show, is a lot of times when things were flying around and she held her ground and did not have fear about it. So there was, you know, the entity never really, you know, got the best of her. And I think that's a profound message as we start entering times of more and more, you know, I mean, between the weather patterns becoming erratic and, you know, more and more paranormal things seeming to be kind of bleeding through, so to speak. You know, the unknown is becoming, you know, showing his face, so to speak, more. And one of the attributes for us to handle this with some sanity is to, like you just said, hold your center. You know, like I recommend people, you know, whether it's yoga or a breathing exercise, because breathing is the, for me, the best way to, when I'm in fear, I'm in short breath. When I take deep breaths, no matter what, my body relaxes. It's as simple as that. It just relaxes. So if you can train yourself to keep breathing deeply, even though, you know, there's red lights coming down on top of the car, you know what I mean?
That's why breathing exercises, you know, this is why it's practiced in many forms of meditation and everything else. And I'll tell you what, you know, if you take deep breaths, slow, big deep breaths,
if you
take your blood pressure while you're doing that, you'll find your blood pressure can drop as much as 20 points.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Wow,
I mean,
okay.
If you take your blood pressure while you're breathing, which you consider normal, you'll find it's much higher than when you did start
mm-hmm.
doing controlled deep breathing. So this mm-hmm. is why your body relaxes.
Mm-hmm.
Your
mm-hmm.
blood vessels and everything start dilating.
Yeah.
This brings more oxygen to every cell in your brain. And it lowers the pressure, lowers the blood pressure, so the cells and the blood vessels and every part of your body doesn't feel under siege from too much pressure.
Right. Which, you know, in turn, I think just helps this, like, I, you know, it, practice now, because I wish we had more callers tonight, and I would love it. I invite the callers to call in, because I feel that we're at a point, if you haven't had something paranormal happen to you, I mean, even just the acknowledgement of when the phone rings, knowing that it's your friend or your grandmother or whoever, you know, the paranormal is such, you know, it's understanding that we communicate beyond the five senses. Because once we understand that we communicate beyond the five senses, we understand we are beyond the five senses. You know, it's not just about a communication. Our existence goes multidimensional. I mean, string theory has already proven 11 other dimensions. Well, I guess it's not proven, but that's the theory that seems to work, where it explains how all these things are happening. It's like, you know, science really is catching up, so to speak, with the mystical and the things, you know, many, you know, I guess Tibetans and people of that nature have been, you know, saying for centuries, so to speak. And, you know, reading your books and doing some meditation work, you know, because at this point, if it hasn't happened to you, it's going to. Even though, you know, it almost seems like at this point, do you find people, like, when they're reading the book? Oh, by the way, a gentleman mailed my radio, Blog Talk Radio thing. He's trying to get a hold of you, and he asked me for your email. Now, I have several. I didn't know which one was the public one. So I told him I would ask you to announce the email for him to get a hold of you. I would do that on the air.
Well, you do got my email. It's bell1313@yahoo.com.
Okay, I have like three email addresses for you, though, so I didn't know which one. Okay, so bell1313.
Okay. Whether it's the one, you know, with my name from SBC Global, that still goes to, you know, my mailbox. It's part of the you know, the AT&T Yahoo.
How it forwards it. I didn't know. And I just was like, I'll let him say it, so
yeah,
I'll let you say
one.
It.
Third one, I don't know what third one. You may have my email up at my, you know, my laboratory in my school.
Right. I think you have emailed me a few times from school to let me know something about a show or something. So,
yeah.
Okay. Bell1313. Bell with two L's. 1313.
One L?
Oh, yeah. I thought, okay. Bell with one L.
Ring. It's Bell after the god of the sun, Beltane, you know, who's associated with Chambers. Yeah.
Well, Beltane, isn't that coming up on Saturday? Did you ever, are you, well, I'll talk to you privately about that.
No, I can tell you right now that, you know, Rosemary's not going, so what's going to happen is that we're not going. We're not going.
Okay, that actually, because I ended up booking a nanny gig for Saturday night, so.
Yeah, but that's okay, because we're not going Saturday, because there's a lot of more other things involved with.
Yeah, I saw with the
DEP,
yeah.
Not really the DEP, the people who think they're archaeologists.
I saw the disdain in the email. But at some point, are we, you know, going to at least go back and play? Because are we still doing another stay overnight at Hawk Rock this summer?
I don't know.
Is that the goal?
I don't know.
You know,
one of the things that's happening here is that this summer I have to finish another book called Portals, which I'm doing with Rosemary. I have to be up at MIT because I'm getting my doctorate in September.
Oh, yes. Wonderful. Okay. Congratulations.
And,
yeah.
Also, you know, I got a research grant to do some work and, you know, on satellite technology. But, you know, so how my summer's going to, plus, you know, I have, you know, my other personal stuff to take care of. I really don't know. My summer's going to be quite busy, so I'm really not making any plans except trying to get as much stuff as I've finished. You know, as long as I stay healthy.
Oh, of course you're going to stay healthy, but okay, so.
Well, if I keep on going to the doctor, I won't.
I agree. So stop going to the doctor. They're only looking for something wrong with you. Stop it.
Gosh.
I'll get my friend up there. We'll give you massages. We'll make you feel better. Don't worry. Don't go. No medications. Stay away from the medications. Okay, Files from the Edge. I'm going to just pick a story, and it's not going to be mine. It's going to be, okay. Well, I came to Kate's story.
Yeah.
Do you remember Kate's story? You want me to read a little?
Yeah, why don't you read it?
Okay. I got a job at a hospital in Scottsdale, Arizona, just after I graduated from nursing school. I lived in a small apartment.
Hold on, you have to go back a little bit to start.
Oh, is this
It starts with the story of the silver
shape. Oh, High Strangeness case number 4, the silver shapeshifter. Okay. This next case involves a professional nurse. I will refer to her as Kate. Kate had a number of visitations as a child of a tall, silver, robot-looking creature that had the ability to change shape. The being would enter her bedroom by walking through the wall after a flash of blue light. Every time the being appeared, she would not be able to move or call her parents for help. In many cases like this one, sleep paralysis is a common occurrence, and although the experiencers are not harmed, they lose the ability to move or speak while the entity is in the room. The only body part in which the person seems to be able to move is the eyes. The being said his name was Lenal, and that he came from another land, in parentheses, dimension, very close to her room. In one visit, he actually picked Kate up in his arms and walked through an opening in the wall to show her his world. She doesn't remember much except that it was foggy and had all kinds of colored lights in the air that illuminated the mist. Could it be that another reality intercepted or crossed near her bedroom? When I heard of this case in 1993, it reminded me of a Twilight Zone, me too. It reminded me of a Twilight Zone episode called The Little Girl Lost, in which a young child accidentally falls into another dimension after a portal opens up in the wall behind her bed. Although her parents could hear her, they couldn't find her. Finally, just before the portal closes, her father and a scientist friend who figure out what is going on are able to rescue her. This episode was filmed in 1961. Most people don't know that Richard Matheson wrote the short story based on a real-life incident involving his young daughter, who rolled off her bed while asleep against a wall. Despite hearing her daughter's cry for help, Matheson's wife was at first unable to locate the young girl. Lenal started appearing to Kate when she was 5 years old. Her contacts with the being would continue on a regular basis until she was 10. Lenal would always enter the room the same way, walking through the wall on the east side of the house, and about at the same time between 2 and 3 in the morning. The contact took place once or twice a month, and during the visit she would be unable to move. Kate said that Lenal looked like a tall silver robot with a gentle and kind voice. The entity would often change shape into a dog or storybook character as if to entertain her or ally her fears. Am I pronouncing that word right?
Yeah.
Okay. Lenal's efforts were successful because eventually Kate no longer feared the alien's appearance and began looking forward to seeing it. Kate tried to tell her parents about Lenal's visits, but they told her it was just dreams. When Kate was 8, her parents took her to a child psychologist, there it is, who found her an intelligent child with a vivid imagination. The doctor told her parents it was common for children her age to have imaginary friends. The night after the visit to the doctor, Lenal paid Kate another visit and was very upset she had told the psychologist about him. Kate was puzzled. How did the entity knew about the visit? It couldn't unless it was watching her. Lenal told her that if she continued to tell people about their conversation, he would become very angry and go away forever. Kate kept silent about the subsequent contacts with the silver robot and didn't mention them anymore to her parents or anyone else. When Kate's mother asked her once about Lenal, she admitted to making him up and his visits. They were imaginary, like the psychologist said. 2 days after her 10th birthday, Lenal appeared for the last time to Kate as a child and said goodbye. The silver robot told her that he would contact her once again in the future. It would be 20 years before Lenal would once again appear to Kate. By that time, she was 30, working as a nurse in Arizona. Below is her story of her final contact to date with the shape-shifting entity. Well, that's pretty amazing, actually.
Yeah, but the story goes on. It becomes more amazing.
You want me to keep reading? I mean, it's up to you.
No, you do a great job. Go ahead. I'm being entertained here.
Entertained with your own writing, you rock. I like this because I think it really gives people a good feeling about the book. Okay, this is Kate's story. I got a job at a hospital in Scottsdale, Arizona, just after I graduated from nursing school. I lived in a small apartment about a mile from my job, so I walked back and forth to work when the weather was nice. I lived quite a simple life and had no strange things happen to me until several days after my 30th birthday. It was June 1992, and I had just finished the evening shift at the hospital where I worked as a nurse in the cardiac intensive care unit. It was almost 11:30 p.m. when I left my job. I was very tired and could not wait to get home to rest. Normally, I would take the streets to walk to my apartment, but that evening, I had a strong impulse to cross a field, a shortcut, but it was pretty dark and isolated. The moon was almost full that night, so I figured it would be safe since it was quite bright out. I slid under the fence and started walking through the field. It was about half a mile long, and I'm not sure who owned it, but I thought if someone objected, I would never do it again. Besides, there were no signs telling me not to trespass. I carried a small flashlight in my purse, and I took it out to see where I was going because there were so many holes and I didn't want to sprain or break an ankle. I was halfway through the field when three deer came out of the brush to my right. They were walking as if they were drugged, and they just collapsed on the ground. Then several birds dropped from the sky and fell to my left and right. They seemed dead. At that moment, several rabbits ran by me, and one of them rolled over on the ground and looked as if it was having a convulsion. I then heard this loud humming sound, and a yellow ball of light appeared in the air several feet above the ground. I was quite startled and stopped in my tracks, since whatever this was, it affected the animals and could possibly hurt me. I felt strange, like when I was a child and would have those nighttime visits with the silver robot, Linao. The only difference this time was that I was still able to move, but couldn't because I was so scared. I just stood there, transfixed, looking at the light. After several seconds, a mist shot out of the light with a loud swoosh. The mist then formed into a shape that turned into Linao. He looked just like I remembered him, tall, maybe 8 feet, and all silver, with a helmet and visor-like thing where his eyes should have been. He then spoke. "Hello, Kate. I told you I would be back." It was quite upsetting to see this being again because I had convinced myself that those childhood experiences were not real and just dreams. I yelled, "Why are you bothering me now? It's been 20 years. Linao said that the time had no meaning to his people and that he had to show me his world. He waved his hand and I felt myself go numb and fall to the ground. I opened my eyes and was in a different place that didn't seem like planet Earth. The sky was red and a fog was all around me. Linao was standing in front of me and started to change shape, first into a horrible creature that looked like the devil. When I turned away and screamed, he turned into a tall, handsome young man with long blonde hair, very pale white skin, and the greenest eyes I have ever seen. He said he could take any form and be anything or anybody I wanted him to be. He told me we were in his world, and he had to bring me there to establish a permanent connection with my mind. Linao explained that he was part of a very ancient race that existed before mankind, and that many of his people were trying to establish mental links with selected humans so his race could come into our world. He then turned back into the tall silver robot-like form and put his hand on my head. Once again, my body went numb, but this time I didn't feel myself falling to the ground. I kind of floated. When I opened my eyes, I was in the field and it was daylight. I looked at my watch. It was 6:23 a.m. The passage of time felt weird because it only seemed like I was in Linao's world for under an hour, yet at least 5 hours had passed. I went home, opened my door, and found my apartment a mess. Furniture was overturned. All my dressers and kitchen drawers were pulled out and emptied. I thought at first that I had been robbed, but my jewelry, money, television, stereo, and other valuables were still there. I asked my neighbors and the people who lived above me if anyone had heard or seen anything, but no one did. Although Linao never appeared again to Kate since that summer night of 1992, she continued to have paranormal experiences in the form of poltergeists and saw shadow-like beings in her home and at the hospital when she worked the night shift. Kate felt as if the shadow figures were spying on her. In 2005, Kate would experience being abducted, not by aliens or dimensional beings, but by flesh and blood humans, she said, were government agents. There's your Men in Black. This is one of the two accounts that have come to my attention in which, after a paranormal or UFO experience, the individual involved was taken by a group of men to some type of secret laboratory. I will relate the story below as told to me by Kate just 24 hours after the kidnapping took place. And then the book goes into being abducted by the government agents. I mean, this poor woman. If it's not robot-like beings, it's the government coming after her.
Well, you know, they took her to a lab, like a secret place where she was drugged. And they put her on a table, and she said, you know, they moved the device open down her that she thought was like an ultrasound.
Right.
She was going in and out of consciousness, and everything was blurry and thing. And she heard a distinct voice, a male's voice, says, "There, I found it." And then she, next thing she remembers, she's waking up in her bedroom at home.
Right now, and she believes that what they found was the link that Lee now put in her to keep her connected, correct?
Right. And from another case I have, it's very, very similar, in which after a person had an abduction by aliens, so to speak, they were also taken to an area where they removed some type of device from up in their nose.
Now, Steven Spielberg, that's what the whole Taken was about, the things coming out in their nose.
Well, you know, yeah, but he took all of those experiences from people who claimed that they had, you know, probes and stuff put into them up through their nose into their brain.
Right.
So, you know, that's all based on not something that Spielberg made up, but actual case studies that, you know, he actually took from, you know, UFO investigations.
So he basically just produced a documentary, but didn't call it a documentary,
it
a miniseries.
He took UFO cases and took all the characteristics and contact cases and, you know, had writers put them all into, like, stories.
But
the basis of what goes on is based on real cases, but the stories that they present may be fabricated.
Right. Now, because I had called you remember when I told you the thing, flecks of gold in the sky, went into this ship-like thing and then went into my forehead? They beamed the light into my forehead?
I remember.
You know, it's like, because I have never, I don't believe that, well, and I should say, I don't think that there's any kind of device per se. I think there's a link between me and some being, but for me, they haven't necessarily, like, because I would be excited to be an ambassador. You know, hey, when do I go? Let's play, you know? Can I see your world? Come on. But it seems interesting because most of the people, when you read it, you know, like you were saying, definitely it started in childhood.
The weird thing about it is that, you know, even with people who have had UFO experiences, that in the past we've used hypnosis on to recall facts. The first thing they do when they're recalling the UFO is they immediately go back to childhood, where they're waking up in their bed and there's some type of entity or being that looks alien in nature standing by their bed. So many of the people who have had paranormal experiences and UFO encounters in the future had an experience when they were a child. And I'll tell you that many, also a good number, a very high percentage of people today who are claiming to have contact cases like Kate and a few others in that book, and also, you know, dozens in my files, also had imaginary friends as a child.
Right.
Whether or not they're imaginary, so-called imaginary friends.
Well, and that's what I think,
of the strangest things is that I kind of had an imaginary friend as a child also.
Really?
And maybe that's why I'm so interested in all this stuff.
Well, I definitely feel that you were picked for this. You know, it feels like, for me, because I don't remember an imaginary friend, but I do remember having an innate ability to like talk to animals and not really know that they couldn't talk back. I just knew they could. So for me, there wasn't really barriers of communication. Communication just seemed very fluid for me in things that most people go, really? You can do that? It's like, oh, well, can't you? Yeah. But I don't remember, it's not that I don't remember a lot of my childhood, but I don't remember visitations at all. I mean, mine didn't start until my 20s, you know, where like lights were exploding in my bedroom, white lights and things of that nature. So I don't know. I mean, I think it's kind of an ever unfolding, but I know for myself, the more we get closer to like 2012, not from the perspective of doom and gloom, not by any means, but it does seem to be that, you know, the veils are clearly doing some shifting here and dimensions are, you know, I look at it and say, you know, by chance, I mean, you can look at it, by chance I met you through Dan Hunt, you know what I mean? The thing, it seems like as I get older, the people I need to be connected to, I am, and that, so there's this, like, sense of me that more and more is going to unfold, that I'll understand it more, where right now it just seems like it's pieces, you know, it's like a puzzle. The pieces don't necessarily connect, but I have a sense that it's all connected. I just don't see the connection yet. Mm. And in all honesty, as long as joy is, it seems that I'm more joyful at this point in time in my in this lifetime than I've ever been. I mean, as a child, I was always afraid. That is one thing that I remember distinctly. I was just afraid of it, and I was always afraid of being left alone. Oh. So, now that I think about that, I don't know. Maybe that was some kind of subconscious thing. I don't know. I'm not here to make things up. I just know I was always afraid to be left alone. And now I crave alone time. I need to be alone, and I have a connection with the forest that, you know, if you had to put it in a category, there's a high strangeness to my connection to the forest. Like, I mean, it's like hands down, and it's also the forest that I go to. I mean, the chambers are, I'm back massively in love with the womb again, you know. Because I believe that on some level, when me and Francine had a fight in the mother womb.
Well, you had a disagreement.
Okay, a disagreement. But I think it created some sort of rift of energy that it was really, I took it as it is my responsibility to clear that.
Yeah, well, I don't know, but, you know, I think it's very coincidental that after that picture was taken, that face appeared behind the rock.
Right. Well, that was the day, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, you know, I have, I take care of a little 2.5-year-old. Well, she's going to be 3 in May. I showed her the picture, and I asked her, I said, do you get a bad sense from the picture or a good sense? And she said a good sense. And Alana also looked at the picture and said that, I forgot, she said something like somebody from Lord of the Rings. I forget who, but she didn't get a bad sense. So I don't know if it's a guardian or, I don't know. To be quite honest, I didn't even know he was there, so.
I don't know, but it's pretty strange.
You gotta, you know, and then again, there's page 186. Phil has graciously allowed me to share a story, which I've shared on enough occasions, about the hooded beings that me, Alana, Max, and her friend John saw at the chamber during a meteor shower. Now, do you think that the meteor shower, because I think Renee tried to go up to Ninham recently during this past meteor shower. Do you think meteor showers kind of open portals because of the nature that, you know, energy's carried on the meteor? No?
No.
Okay, okay.
I don't believe so.
Okay.
I think it was just all coincidental that you were just up in there that particular night that was happening. you know, I think you were in the right place at the right time.
Right, right.
Because these hooded beings, these entities really didn't pay too much attention to you.
They didn't pay any attention to us, to be quite honest.
It's like maybe
they just
they
appeared.
Didn't see you.
Right.
Maybe you were just looking into their world and watching them, and it was a one-way thing, or you weren't important enough for them to bother with.
Which, you know, and either, however you slice it, I was very, you know, happy that they didn't pay us no mind, because, you know, I was basically, because, you know, the way it unfolded that night, it was, we were all just hanging out, and like, about 11:45, I looked at the kids and say, hey, you want to go to the chambers? I mean, it was like, it wasn't a plan. It literally came as a, you know, I had the kids, let's go. And they were like, of course, sure, let's do this. And then as we were driving up, I went, oh, that's right, there's a meteor shower tonight. Oh, like, you know, cool. So, you know, it's interesting how things call to us that we might not know, you know, the whys or the hows. But I definitely would recommend, you know, if you're looking, because I find people are looking for experiences now. The people that I hang out with, they want to have something happen.
Yes, well, you have to ask why. Why do they want something to happen? Is because their life is, you know, so dull and mundane, they want to feel more important, they want to escape from the reality, they want to be entertained. But you see, when some people who want to have an experience, then they have one, then they get fearful and they get all screwed up by it.
Have you seen that? Because
I've seen it many times. People who I've worked with going out investigating paranormal cases, they just join me because they think, oh, this is like interesting. I'm like a ghost hunter or something like that.
Right.
And they begin to experience things and they begin to see that this is all real and they get scared out of their mind and they quit and they get away and I don't want nothing to do with this, you know. Strange behavior. Then again, you know, of course, some people have been experiencing this since they were younger, and they're familiar with all of this now, and they don't get fearful anymore.
Right.
But, you know, the people out there have to realize that, you know, you can read books on this, you could read books on the paranormal, you can say, oh, yeah, I want to do that, ghosts and stuff like that. But, you know, when you're actually in a situation where you're experiencing something, boy, you begin to say, this is real, and all of a sudden that level of fear goes really high. The fear of the unknown is something that you're not controlling, that's actually very real, that, you know, nobody has control over, and it brings out a lot of deep-rooted fears of hidden predators in the dark and stuff like that.
Absolutely. My hands are buzzing as you were saying that. That's the truth. And I agree. I think that, you know, I don't think you have to seek it. I think you have to be open. I think life is magical, however you slice it. And, I mean, I get that you can get frightened of it, but, you know, there really is a magic to life if you're open to it. You know, and it doesn't have to necessarily be the negative. It's, you know, like she said, the entity Lee now was, you know what I mean, kind. It spoke with a kind voice, and you know, I bet you if you talk to Kate, the government agents probably scared her, you know, maybe 10 times more than Lee now did. I don't know. I'm speculating, but
well, yeah, I'm sure that I mean to be abducted and have something put on your nose like chloroform to make you groggy, then get it.
That's right. That's
strapped on a table. Who knows? You know, who knows, there's things I didn't put in the book. She was afraid that they were going to start dissecting her to get whatever they wanted out of her.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, and human beings would do that. I mean,
absolutely.
You know, human beings.
Right. Yeah, because, you know, I'll be honest, I've always said this too. My biggest fear is human beings. You know, I've never really per se had a fear of, you know, entities. And like I said, I haven't been experiencing entities my whole life, at least not to my conscious recollection. But animals, things like that, I've always felt safer around. Humans have always been the slick, tricky ones for me, because that's just been my experience.
Yeah, well, that's true, because, you know, there are good people out there, there are bad people out there, there are very indifferent people out there. I mean, there's a whole sort of type of individuals out there that will do whatever they have to do. People will take advantage of other people. And I mean, you know, so I imagine that in the paranormal world, in these other dimensions, there might be entities like that too. Some that are good, some that are bad, some that are indifferent, some that just want to use you, some that just want to be entertained by doing whatever they do to you. So when you look at all this, you just can't put one label on it and say it's good, it's bad, it's evil, it's whatever. You know, I'm sure there's in these other multiple dimensions that lie around us, there are other types of entities with multiple, all have different personalities. They're all individuals. And some of them may enjoy contacting humans. Some of them may enjoy contacting humans to play games with them, to be entertained. And some of them may contact humans to use them for their own benefit. You see, we don't know. This is why, you know, it's very, very dangerous to go into this stuff unless you're willing to take the heat, so to speak, and understand what's going on. And you have to be you have to question everything that's happening. And why is it happening? What's happening? Are you perceiving it properly? You know, most people, when they have a paranormal experience, they try to deal with it, and so that they can understand it, so most of the fear goes away, so they feel comfortable with what happened to them.
Right.
But, you know, how people report a paranormal experience primarily depends upon their education, their cultural background, their religious or philosophical beliefs, and how they view life. I mean, and their upbringing from their parents. When people report a paranormal experience, they're reporting it to how they perceived it, not necessarily to exactly what took place.
Mm. Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point because what could be paranormal to somebody else could be quite the norm to another.
Yeah, well, many of these experiences, even if there's entities involved, they don't usually come and say, "Hi, you know, my name is Bill from the fifth dimension." You know,
and break out in song.
And they don't tell you, know, like you're having a phone conversation. Most people, they don't identify themselves mostly. They shapeshift. They keep hidden. And the thing is that a person who's like a really, you know, hardcore, you know, Catholic or something may think that that was a visitation either from the devil or an angel. A person who's like into spiritualism and a lot of the New Age stuff may think that they had a visitation from an ascended master. A person who believes in, you know, spiritualism to a certain degree, where, you know, he believes in spirits and spirit guides, will think that they are manifestations of spirit guides. So the way people believe will depend upon how the encounter is reported to someone who's researching this.
No, absolutely. Well, did you put the story in the book? I believe you did, where when you had a crew at one point, there was like four of you?
Well, there was more than that, but that was Interdimensional Universe.
Oh, is that the other? Okay. Because one of the crew didn't make it, right?
Well, more than one. Several of them died.
Can you share some of that story?
Well, you know, it involves my early days of UFO research, and, you know, we put together an investigative team of primarily dealing with UFO cases. And the more you deal with UFO cases, the more you're going to deal with paranormal stuff also, because it's all connected.
Exactly. I agree.
You know, we had a team we called ourselves the Dream Team of the paranormal, of UFOs, because we were all from many different fields. It was a biologist, a police officer, you know, a scientist, myself, and a physical scientist, and a reporter, an airline pilot, executive, an electrical engineer. And we got involved with a case that involved contact and also UFOs that had gone generations back in a family, so that the young daughter now at that time was starting to experience what the mother experienced and what the grandmother experienced and the great-grandmother experienced.
Wow. Okay.
Encounters with a being that, you know, looked like some type of gargoyle that came out of a black hole and that appeared in the room or wherever they would go if it wanted to contact them and take them.
Wow.
And now it was starting to go after the daughter, and the mother now, who had these experiences as a child, was afraid that they were going to take her daughter and not return her.
Wow.
So when we got involved with this case, and what happened is that I brought in a psychologist from California. We did. And this
okay.
was a person at the time who was very involved with UFO research. And he knew how to do regressive hypnosis, and
okay.
he was very, you know, he was very savvy about, you know, UFO abductions and stuff like that. So we thought we were dealing with a UFO abduction, of course. So while we were all there one night, the daughter came running out of the room and said, UFO outside now, and we went outside into the lawn. It was, you know, February, it was dark, and there was a glowing yellow light that was bobbing across the lawn. And, of course, mm-hmm. everybody was taking up their cameras, trying to photograph it. I started going out and started walking up to the light, and as I did, the light froze. I got maybe 100 feet from it, and then it shot up into the air and disappeared through the clouds.
Yeah.
Now, the next thing, of course, we went to do is we did the hypnotic session on the mother. But, of course, that was done at a different day, and I was the only one there with the doctor because the doctor said, you know, you can't have all these people around when
right.
we're doing this.
She won't relax, right.
Yeah, so I had my tape recorder, which was a cassette recorder then, and, you know, I put it on, and you could, in going through the hypnosis, about maybe 15 minutes into the session, she never went fully under, but she started regressing back to a child where the being would come out of the hole in the bedroom.
Okay.
Just then, when she was just about to give a whole bunch of information, her daughter starts. Her daughter was sick, by the way. She was in the bedroom sleeping. Her daughter starts screaming, and immediately when she hears that, she snaps out of the hypnosis.
Right.
She gets up out of the chair like almost like a mechanical response. Starts
right.
running down the hall to the bedroom. So her door. So I was behind her, and the doctor was behind her, and we were, you know, walking behind her as she was running down there. But her daughter came running out of the room, and like we met halfway in the hall.
Okay.
And her daughter stops short when she sees us, and she points to me and says, "She said, well, she said that the man in the hole came out. The man from inside the black hole came out in the room." And he said, we better stop what we're doing. And
wow.
she points to me and she said he knows about you and your friends, and he knows where you all live, and he knows how to get to you all.
Wow.
This is little girls, like 6 years old.
Oh, my. Wow.
And, you know, she's in her nightgown, and obviously and her eyes are all glazed and big and everything.
Wow.
And she's pointing is that he knows how to get to you and your friends.
Did your hair stand up at that point?
Oh, I was like chilling, you know. I was woo.
Yeah.
You know, I felt like I was part of the Exorcist movie or something.
Yeah, exactly.
So what happened is that the tape recorder was still running in the room.
Okay.
And we decided to end this, you know, for now, and we left. And I stopped the tape recorder, you know, I went back home, you know, and so on. Now, the following weekend, we used to meet at my place when I lived in Greenwich, and we used to meet in my finished basement with a bar.
Right,
and And the group came over, and they asked about the hypnotic session, and I said, you know, well, this is what happened. So I explained to them what happened, and I said, I didn't even listen to the tape yet. I didn't even rewind it. So I brought out the tape recorder and rewound the tape, and everybody wanted to listen to, you know, to what was going on, what the hypnotic.
Of course, yeah.
So we play it, and all of a sudden you hear the tape, you know, go back the lead, you know, it passes the leader,
right.
And then it, you know, hear the audio, and the doctor's putting the woman under hypnosis, and you can hear him talk, and all of a sudden the voices start fading out. and it's replaced by howling, screaming, all kinds of electronic buzzing, and a strange language comes in there. And I didn't understand what he couldn't understand what the language was, but it was sounded like it was some type of animal or some type of demonic thing talking on there, but we couldn't understand the language. Everybody in the group, their eyes started tearing. You could tell everybody was freaked out. This was not audible in the room. This came out on the tape recorder. It was an electronic voice phenomenon. People have to realize out there that UFO investigators were picking up electronic voice phenomena on their recorders involving contact cases long before the ghost hunters went out to cemeteries and said, does anybody want to talk to us? Like idiots.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Right?
So what happened is that as we played the tape, all of a sudden this like electrical noise, like loo, 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 like a siren going off started, and the language stopped. And then the tape cleared, and a very clear voice came on that tape and said, we know who you are. They pointed us out to you.
Wow.
And
this is the group, essentially, all in your basement.
Yeah, and then the woo, woo, woo come back on again, and the voice comes on again. And then there's a whole bunch of buzzing again and howling and yelling. It sounded like something from, like, tape from the Exorcist movie.
Wow.
So what happened is that from then on there, every member of the group of my stuff started experiencing paranormal phenomena. For example, the biologist called me up one day, and he said that he's been hearing voices. Someone is trying to get him to do something. He's been hearing voices in the night.
Wow.
And then I didn't hear from him for a while, and he calls me up again, and he said he made contact with them.
Oh, my God.
Beings appeared in his room. They were short, they were blue, and they had hoods on, and they came around his bed, and they told him that unless they were going to kill him.
Wow.
I didn't think too much about what am I going to think about this? This guy who's, you know, stable, comes from a very wealthy family.
Mm.
I mean, you know, he had everything, you know. He you know, has a science degree. He was very educated, really into UFOs. Now, I didn't know what to think about this back in the 70s.
Now, one question, did the meetings continue weekly after this tape-recorded session?
No.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
No.
So you weren't continuing what you were doing. You were heeding the warning of the being.
No, we weren't heeding it. Everybody in that group was so freaked out, they didn't want to have a meeting. They wanted to, you know, my God, what's going on here? They wanted to stay away from this for a while. Everybody was too spooked.
Wow, okay.
So I get a call one day, and it's a family member, and he says, well, did you read the Greenwich Times? And they said, I say, what? He said, your friend, and I'm not going to name his name, jumped in front of a train at the Greenwich Station and killed himself.
Oh, my God.
And I said, oh, my gosh, you know.
Oh, my God.
Then we're all pretty freaked out about that now, and I called
other
people to talk about him, and the person who was the corporate executive said to me, he had this dream shortly after hearing the tape, where he it wasn't a dream. He said he woke up about 3 o'clock in the morning, and his wife was sleeping like she was in a coma, and he woke up and he looked in ahead of him, and standing in front of the bed and a little bit to the side, he said, was a being that was in a hood that looked like the devil with red eyes, and it said, stop what you're doing. If you get involved again, the being stretched out his arm, and there was a beating heart in his hand, and said, this could be your heart. And he squeezed it, and blood shot all over the room, onto the walls, onto the bed and everything. And then he started closing his eyes and screaming. And, of course, he woke up, and his wife said, what's wrong? And he was sweating, and he looked around. There was no blood, of course. And he told his wife what happened, and she says, oh, you're just, you know, getting freaked out with the UFO stuff. You better give it up. Well, he goes for his routine check with his doctor, and his doctor, you know, never had any heart trouble before. And his doctor's listening to his heart and does an EKG and tells him that he's got something wrong with the valve in his heart.
Oh, my.
He said, well, it's a surgery we have to do, and to make a long story short, but it's, you know, the surgeon has done it 100 times. It's routine. He can, you know, fix it very easily. And I went to see him in the hospital, in Greenwich Hospital, before the surgery, and he was, you know, spirits were up and everything, and, you know.
He wasn't scared?
No, because the doctors assured him that, you know, this was just like a routine operation. They've done 100 times.
Right, right.
So he had the surgery done. Everything went fine, and he's in the hospital. He's recovering. The day that he was supposed to go home, he just drops dead. His heart stopped beating.
See, but what I don't understand is the being keeps saying stop, but you guys have stopped, and the beings kept coming at you.
Yes, but you see, the thing is that perhaps we found out too much.
Wow.
Now, what happened next, one of the persons who was a pilot called me up and said he was visited by 3 men in black. And this is before people knew about MIB and all that.
Right, right.
They flashed ID cards saying they were from the government. They told him to give up UFO research or he will lose his pilot license, and they will make sure that he never ever works for another airline in his life.
Wow.
They said, once we get through with you, you will not even be able to transport chickens from Mexico.
Wow.
So, of course, you know, what did he do? He can't give up his livelihood.
Who knows
who these guys really were? He gave up UFO research. Then one person who was an electronic engineer who was an atheist started thinking, heard his son talking one day in his bedroom a few times at 3 o'clock in the morning. Finally, he went in and he said, who are you talking to? He said, I'm talking to the man who appears. And he was on the floor like he was playing with something.
Right.
And he was playing, he said he was playing with Ruffy, his dead dog.
Oh, wow.
That the man, the being, came
right.
in and said that he would bring back his dog if they would help him hurt his father.
Whoa.
Now, all this poltergeist and stuff started happening to this guy. He started being followed by black helicopters. He started having UFO close encounters. He began hearing all these voices in his house, and all these things started happening to him. And he became very convinced that this was the devil, because he came out one day when it was snowing and his Volkswagen was not parked in front of the house anymore. It was like 50 feet away, 60 feet away on a big snowbank that was just plowed, and there was a red pentagram upside down drawn on the snow. So
the car was on top of the snowbank with the red. Wow.
Now,
so clearly this is not just MIB. I mean, this really is.
This is the whole thing of the whole paranormal. So he became very convinced that.
I would have been convinced.
He became very convinced that this was the devil. And
wow.
He was an atheist, remember. And
okay.
Because of this experience, he gave up UFOs and he became a born-again Christian.
Wow.
Now. The police officer.
Okay.
Calls me up one day, and, you know, we used to meet at the police officer's house sometime. His wife used to bring us, you know, sandwiches and everything. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, he comes and tells me that he said his wife is not his wife anymore. Somebody replaced her.
Oh,
in other
wow.
words, her personality changed so much. She was forcing him to give up UFO investigations. And she said it happened one time where they were visiting somebody's house and a woman was there who was a psychic, said to them, I got a message for you. Go outside. You'll see a UFO. So they just went outside and they look up and they see this big dark object coming down on the house and then it pulls back up again. From then on there, he said his wife changed. He said, it was not his wife anymore. He said somebody or something replaced his wife.
Wow.
And she would not even allow me or any of the other members near the house or near him anymore. So he gave up UFO research, and several months after that, his wife just dropped dead.
Oh, my.
Now, so, this was the dream team.
And this is
now,
in the 70s?
We uncovered whatever, nothing happened to me. Nothing at all.
No visitation or anything?
Nothing. Everything like this is happening all around, but nothing happened to me. Now, the tape.
Right.
I gave the tape to an audio engineer up at SUNY at Purchase who does all the taping for the lectures and they have shows there and everything.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And back then in the 70s, they did a lot of reel-to-reel stuff.
Okay.
Okay, and I said, well, this tape, the sound's on the tape. You know, can you help me with them, maybe clear them up? And well, so I play it to him, and he said, I said, there's a strange language on there which I can't identify. So I just play the tape, and he says, stop it. He says, I know what that language is. I said, why? He said, it's English backwards.
Oh, wow.
Now, he says he recognized it because, you know, when he does the lectures on the tape, he rewinds it, and you could hear when it goes backwards through the recording heads.
Yep.
And you could hear it going backwards, the voices.
Right.
So we take the tape, and he puts it on a reel-to-reel, retapes it, and then plays it the opposite direction.
Yeah.
And there's a voice on there that gives a message.
What is the message?
I can't remember it all, but it said, my name is Iblis, and I am a member of the Millennium Council. The areas that you call portals are actually doorways to our dimension. And he says that you must stop what you're doing or we will take direct action against you and your friends. The areas you talk about are restricted. It is the only place in which the council can communicate with this planet. And then during the end of that conversation, the voice kind of like slows down, almost like it's getting tired, like it's losing energy.
Okay.
And then disappears.
Wow. So they thought that you were trying to close the portal down?
I don't know what they were, whoever, whatever.
Yeah, huh? How do you know? Right.
Now, get this. A short time later, I have a conversation with someone I know who's from Turkey.
Okay.
Who's Islamic.
Okay.
And I mentioned this person is involved with UFO research, interested. And I said, the entity gave its name when it said on the thing. He said, well, what's the name? I said the name was Iblis. The person almost went into shock.
What does Iblis mean?
It's actually a Persian name for the name of the devil.
Wow.
So, I mean, this was back in, a long time ago. And,
right.
Of course, you have to consider that whatever case that we touched on, whatever intelligence was behind that case,
did
not want us interfering. And it went out of its way to use whatever fear, whatever, like the little girl said when she came out, he knows exactly how to get to you and your friends. In other words, remember in the movie Poltergeist, did you ever see that? The little lady was a psychic, and she said, now hold on to yourself, because it knows what scares you.
Yes, that's right.
Well,
yes.
A very similar situation. And, of course, this happened before the movie Poltergeist.
Right. Yeah, that's interesting because of what I was saying earlier about the fear. Right, they know the weaknesses. That's interesting. I never thought about that.
So whatever... whatever was going on with that particular case, I still have a picture of the little girl.
What happened to the tape? That's what I'm curious about.
Well, tape is another thing. I had it for a very, very long time, and I was going to take it out one day back in 1984.
Okay.
And I have all my tape cassettes in, boxes, not boxes, but...
Suitcase-like, right?
Cases for cassettes.
Right.
And... I go to pull that tape out because, you know, it was getting, it was on there for a number of years, and I haven't really listened to it for a while. I pull it out, and all the tape is pulled out and crumbled up. And just, it, like it was pushed back into the cassette thing.
Yeah, but it was inaudible at that point.
Yeah, because it was all twisted and everything. It was cut. I mean, it was like, I mean, you know, when those cassettes, you know, when they used to get.
Yep, you can pull it out. Yeah, yeah.
All twisted and over, and it was completely. I took it to some place, and it was just completely useless. The whole entire ferrite coating was somehow demagnetized.
Wow. Well, and on some level, you kind of believe that maybe something should just be left alone. I mean,
you know, if you're not prepared to deal with it, but you see, you can't discount the fact that I was so interested in what was going on. I had no fear whatsoever. The thing
now,
is,
and I think that's key. Now, but they didn't try to scare you at all?
Nothing happened to me. And I think whatever happened, they tried to use the people around me to show what was happening to them because they were fearful fear in me, say, thinking that I would be next.
Exactly.
But, you know, that was a time where I had just gotten out of the military. I had just finished, you know, from my bachelor's degree, and a few years before that, I had just finished two tours in Vietnam.
Right.
I was more scared of people walking around with rifles,
yeah,
than AK-47s than I was of entities from another dimension.
Yeah, that was your experience.
I think the fact is that the capability, my fear level was so low, and the amount of energy required to induce fear in me was so high that they needed. That they did not focus on me, but they focused on the people around me and perhaps thought that I would back off after seeing what happened to them.
Right, right. Have you ever had an entity, you know, try and scare you and dance with you in like a touche kind of thing? You know, take you on?
I've been in cases, in paranormal cases, where there have been, entities, but, you know, that have done things like throw things at me. Poltergeists and stuff, like things come flying off the walls or the table on me, or, you know,
no mind control?
No, nobody can control. I can't even control my mind. Even control. Let me tell you something.
Please.
No one can control my mind because I was married for 12 years and I had the most controlling person who could control me. And let me tell you, after that experience, nothing can control me.
She prepared you then for your UFO study.
During the military, I was physically abused by the best from injuries and, other things in the military.
Well, and training in general, right.
And the 12 years of marriage, I was psychologically abused by the best.
You are too much. Well, so I think that's a really important point, though, because it's kind of similar to what I was saying earlier. If we choose, because it isn't everything is a choice in life. You know, it's like you choose to choose what you're thinking. You know what I mean? It's like people have this whole thing that something can get in and take over their thoughts, but they can only get in because you believe they can get in. If you choose to say, no, you can't get in. Or if they get in, you simply go, I don't believe that because I know who I am and I'm going to choose to think otherwise. I just believe that there's such a strong component to the multidimensional. Many people believe that we're at a weakness to the multidimensional. And I have experienced, quite the opposite, and not because I've studied to know it. It just seems like, you know, kind of similar to when 13 cars were chasing me down the street. You know, I simply didn't surrender and say, okay, the 911 lady goes, pull over, and I'm like, are you out of your mind? And for whatever the reason, we just flew. And I mean that most literally. We flew. So it just seems like there's a choice in matter that you can lay down. And I know in my lifetime I have laid down and let five people beat the crap out of me. So I've had the laying down experience. Once you've had it and you say it's enough, you just don't lay down anymore. And then miraculously or not, you don't get beat up by things, whether they be people or entities. You know, it really is a conscious choice to say, I am in charge of me. And it's not that I can necessarily control the atmosphere or the elements, but I can control that I'm safe. Safety is a choice. It's not a predicament I find myself in. It's a choice that I create. Do you feel that as well, that you create that safe space?
You do to a certain degree, but, you know, some people can't, as something that keeps on pressuring you and keeps on pushing you, some people can't maintain that control.
Agreed.
And they become very weak after a while. They get worn down. This is why in many of these paranormal cases, for example, the entity will appear as something good sometimes and something that you can identify with it, like a childhood story character or an angel, or appear like an ascended master or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it gains the person's trust. And of course, you know, in Islam, they believe in these beings, these multidimensional beings, but they say that they can only come into you if you allow them to come into you, because they're going to give you something in return for allowing them to come into you and control you. And most people will say, well, why would you want to do that? You see, a lot of people feel that when they have contact with a lot of these entities, they feel very selected. And they usually pick on people who are, like, down on themselves,
right,
that people usually have no respect for. So they come and say, you are special. And these people want to feel special.
Right.
So they put their guard down, and these entities, you know, they slowly start to control them. And after a while, once the entity has control, of course, it's not kind anymore because it has what it wants.
Oh, I see. Right.
So, you know, we're looking at the spectrum here is that, you know, the universe is very complex. There's other dimensions where all these entities are. You know, some of them are good, some of them are bad. The ones that are good, that, you know, they will not bother with you because they do not want to interfere with your life.
Right.
So you can imagine that if you're having continued contact with an entity, you have to be very suspicious of the purpose of the contact.
Right.
Yes, because you know, there's a natural law in the universe, whether it's, you know, it's an angel, whether it's a djinn, whether it's a human spirit, an ascended human spirit. You do not interfere with the life path of those other entities because that's not allowed. You know, there's
it's not allowed to interfere, but guidance is allowed. They're allowed to,
only to a
help you ask the question, so to speak.
Only to a certain degree, but most of it's a non-interference. And you see a lot of this reference in many of the religious books where one of the sayings says, God helps those who help themselves.
Okay.
So, you know, you may have, like, a higher being, an ascended human or something, you know, contact you and say, but the contacts will be very subtle, so you think that it's still your decision. You know,
yes,
do what you
yes,
want
I agree
do.
With that. Yes, I agree, yes.
But most of these ascended beings by appearing in front of you and giving you information, they're breaking a higher law of the universe. You cannot interfere. And plus, the negative ones that do this, you know, are breaking the laws of the universe, and they may be dealt with a certain way. But they do get away with a certain amount because, you see, if you accept this being, the other higher beings that are controlling this are saying, this is free will. Whatever is going on here, if you accept it, then, you know, there's nothing we can do about it. It's like the same thing, but if you can take that idea and go back in time, back to the early days of Christianity, where it says, for example, the devil, which I don't necessarily believe in the devil,
okay,
but the devil cannot bother you unless you let the devil into your life and accept it. And I think that was applying to some of these not as ascended, but more or less evil or beings who interfere with the human race. But they can't do anything unless you allow them to do it. You accept them. It's the same thing in Islam with the jinn. When the jinn appear, the jinn will tempt you and say, I will give you 3 wishes of anything you want, but after those 3 wishes, you have to give me what I want. You're accepting and making a deal with a dimensional entity.
Well, is that what they mean by selling your soul?
Well, I think it was made for selling, something like that. But you see, in Islam believes, which is a very nice religion, by the way. It's, you know, like Christianity, much of it got distorted over the years.
Exactly. But, I trust that. I don't know the religion, but I trust what you just said.
But in Islam, you see, there are no fallen angels.
Okay.
They believe that angels were created from light, so they're all pure, and they cannot be corrupted. However, there are another race of beings called jinn, which were a race of beings before humans who became very corrupted and were dealt with. And there are humans who also became very corrupted. So there are good jinn, bad jinn, good humans, bad humans, because these beings, have been corrupted. But they are not made of light. Jinn are made from smokeless fire, according to the Quran, which is actually, I think, a plasma, and humans were made from the mud and the clay, which I interpret as physical matter. And angels were made from light, which I consider photonic in nature.
Okay. Good description.
Yeah, you have these 3 classes of beings in the universe. And 2 of them have free will. The jinn and humans have free will to choose between good and evil. The angel, the angelic society, these higher order of beings, only have 1 choice, and that's good because they can't be corrupted.
Okay.
Now, in Christianity, it talks the story about a group of angels who revolted against God and were cast down, and hell was created. Now, in Islam, the story is very similar, but it doesn't involve angel. It involves a group of jinn who became very corrupted, revolted against God and the angels, and were in fact cast out of an ascended place and became the demons and the devils and the evil creatures that try to corrupt humanity. So in Islam, what I'm saying is that these evil guys are not fallen angels like the Christians believe, but they are jinn.
Okay.
But it's an interesting story because the idea, the leader of the evil jinn, you know what his name was? Iblis.
Bush? Sorry. No, I don't know. I would assume it might be something to the effect of
I'm telling you, his name was Iblis.
Oh, Iblis. Okay. Right.
And it means, in the Islamic interpretation of that name, means without worth.
Really? Without worth? Isn't that interesting?
And in Islam, the demons and the devils became the evil jinn who were cast out into another place. And their main goal, you see, the story goes is that the jinn were on this planet as a race for millions of years. And they became very powerful, developed the technology. They were not like humans are today. They had more power. They started warring with each other and were in danger of annihilating themselves, and they polluted the planet, and so on. It sounds familiar, right?
Did you hear about the oil going on now?
I heard about it.
Yeah.
And according to the Quran, Allah said, this has got to stop. So he sent an army of angels down, and they actually stop the jinn from warring with each other, who were in danger of destroying themselves, and took them out of the physical universe so that the planet could be healed into another dimension. In there, Allah said, I am going to create a new being and make him master of the place and where you were because you don't deserve it anymore. You need to be here, but I'm going to put another class of beings there, and I'm going to call it human beings, man. And I want the angels to bow before man, and I want the jinn to bow before man, and all the jinn and all the angels bow before man to serve them and to guide them so that one day they can ascend to a higher plane of existence. But however, a group of jinn led by Iblis said, we're not bowing to man because we are better than man. They are made out of the mud and the clay, and we are made out of beautiful fire. Mm. And according to the story, Allah said, okay, if you don't want to, go to hell.
Literally, huh?
Yeah. And so Iblis and his group was cast out of heaven. They were jinn, and their main purpose now is to corrupt humankind. And Iblis, who was a very high ascended jinn, said to God, according to the Quran, I can prove to you that the being you made is not worthy of the place and where they live. Give me the power. I will not hurt them, but give me the power and let me influence them to prove to you that they are not worthy. And Allah said, okay, Iblis, you can try, but at the judgment day, it's going to stop. And, of course, the story is that Iblis is trying to corrupt humanity by tempting him away from God. And, of course, in Christianity, we see the counter of this as Satan, a fallen angel who's trying to do the same thing.
Right.
But in
right.
Christianity and it's in Judaism it's Satan, and but in Islam it's not a fallen angel, it's a jinn.
Right.
By the way, I brought that up because in March of 2011, the book that I'm writing with Rosemary Guiley called The Jinn is coming out.
Yes, which we'll do. We'll definitely do a show. The three of us will do a show on that. Well,
my extensive research of the jinn. Of course, you know, that's going to be a mind blower because for the first time, I'm talking about my experiences in the Middle East.
Oh, wow.
1995.
Oh, I got to read that.
I didn't know anything about jinn, where I went over there and started picking up information about jinn and got into a big investigation in Israel and Saudi Arabia and actually Syria, Iraq, and Oman.
Interesting. Well, which is also the birthplace of all the three major religions.
This is true, except, of course, for Buddhism.
Do you consider Buddhism to be a major, the three?
Yes.
I mean,
oh,
or,
I consider it to be a, yeah, it's pretty up there.
I agree. I guess that was an American statement for me to say that, right?
I think most of the world right now are Christians, and then after that, I think it's
Muslim, no?
Yeah. And then, you know, Judaism, and I think Buddhism and Hinduism follow after that, and then there's a great variety, of course, other religions that, you know, are practically going out of existence. But I think the big five are what I, you know, named.
Well, let me ask you a question. And, I mean, you opened up the door to talk about the jinn, but clearly we'll, you know, in 2011 we'll talk about the jinn. But do you feel that a lot of the paranormal experiences are, you know, kind of this game of temptation to keep humanity down? Or because, I mean, like, the gentleman that gave you the pictures of those space devices that, you know, when you took them to MIT, they were like, this is so ahead of our time, you know, they didn't know what really to do with it.
Right.
Seemed to be on the other, you know, meaning, what do you find is the prevalent experience, you know, in your cases, are they prevalently trying to keep humanity down, or is it equal to those that are trying to indeed embrace humanity and help humanity rise above all of the warring and, you know, just bad stuff?
No, I think it's a mixed bag. I think there are entities here that are generating paranormal phenomena that are like, you know, almost, you know, just having fun.
Like kid-like, you mean?
Yeah, like having, you know, fooling around with humans just to amuse themselves.
Oh, God. That's
That
is such a Twilight Zone episode. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and in the book on the jinn, I gave you a paragraph, and I said, well, there are green jinn who, according to Islam, are like the children of the jinn. Even though they're children, they're still thousands of years old.
Right,
the jinn
lives
a very long time. And I said, you know, some of them are like very kind children, some of them are naughty children, and some of them are just cruel children. I said, did you ever have a friend who hear about a kid who used to pull the wings off of flies?
Of course.
You know, use a magnifying glass to burn ants? I said, just pray that if you ever make a contact with a green jinn, it's not one of those children of the jinn who has a similar attitude, you know, with you.
Indeed.
And of course, you know, you have also these contacts which are almost childlike, will involve elves and dwarfs and fairies, which children have contact with children, and they seem to play with them, and they have a good time with them. And then again, you have these other more complex contacts from entities that are totally evil, which in Islam they're called the red jinn, and
right. These
other ones which are called the blue jinn, which are almost, you know, angelic in nature, that do good things or try to correct the things that the bad ones are doing. I mean, you have a mixed bag there of these dimensional entities. But the thing you have to do is you can't look at these entities in the religious sense. You have to look at them for what they really are. They're a race of beings that exist in a dimension very close to ours. It's in the same space that we exist in, but in another area of dimension in which we cannot see or turn into under normal circumstances. But it seems because they have greater power, they have greater lifespans, more knowledge of the universe, that they have the ability from time to time to actually watch us, communicate with us, and enter our world from time to time at various locations.
Okay, location, or do you believe that, like, would a drug addict be easier to approach than somebody who meditated on a daily basis and, you know, cleanse their...
A person who meditates claims somehow to be getting information also.
Indeed.
And, but, you know, a drug addict is also getting information on a different scale. So, you know, I don't know. I don't know. Maybe. Because the human mind is becoming weak and dependent upon, you know, a substance, these other entities that just want to have fun or play around with humans may find these people more susceptible. And the people who are actually meditating and going to monasteries and doing the strength of mind, maybe they are connecting with a higher force. I believe that they're not connecting with jinn, but some of these people are actually starting to connect into the knowledge of the universe.
Okay. Now, would you classify the gentleman that had those drawings as that?
I don't know, because, you know, and he ended up all burned out. It seems that these entities used him and kept on using him like a device or a vesicle, and they just used him till he was completely burned out and couldn't function anymore.
In other words, they took no regard to how his body was handling
his body.
Right, their frequency. Right.
Or his physical capabilities. They just did what I compare it sometime like they almost used him almost like if he was maybe was a laboratory animal.
Interesting.
But he did produce a lot of interesting stuff. But the fact is that he's not doing it anymore is because, you know, he's in a hospital.
Emotional hospital or a physical, you know, for his physical body or his emotional?
Well, it's a nursing home.
A nursing home. Oh, okay.
Completely burned out by all of this.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, and he said to me once, he said, I can't stop it. I feel like they're just trying to burn me out. And he's produced like 2,000-page manuscripts, all those diagrams, language, music.
Languages, too, yeah.
Amazing stuff. But the thing is that they used him maybe as an experiment to see how much they can put through a human being.
Mm.
What are the capabilities of a human being? How much can they hold before they crack?
Now, I want to shift a little bit. Are you planning on ever doing a book on the work that he brought through?
Oh, it's mentioned in some of my other stuff.
Right, but I'm talking about like the, you know, the deciphering of the language that, you know, you're...
Yeah, some of that's, yeah, some of that is being published in Ultraterrestrial Contacts in December.
Excellent, excellent, because that was, I mean, I remember when you brought that downstairs at that time, it was like, you know, this is language, just so the audience knows that in order for Phil to decipher it, you have to put it up against the mirror, read it forwards and backwards.
You have to make
you know,
transparency of it first, and then put it up to the mirror.
Yeah, I mean, it's literally a holographic language. Would that be an accurate statement?
Three-dimensional language.
Three-dimensional. I mean, and I've seen it. It's really the drawings, too. That's right. What, the drawings were in a Fate issue, right? A magazine, no?
I think they were... It was on the one of them was on the cover of UFO magazine.
Right, because I mean, you know, just a quick background. When you brought this information to some of the greatest scientific minds on our planet, which are at MIT, what was their reaction?
Also went out to the University of Chicago.
They didn't know, right? Didn't they say it was literally like hundreds of years?
There was a lot of things in there which they recognized, which were accurate. And but there were a lot of things that they didn't understand. And from, you know, my knowledge of what happened is that some people got some very good ideas from looking at those diagrams and created some technology that's available today.
Excellent. Which I think is, you know, that's ultimately...
That was the purpose, I think.
Exactly. See, it's if we don't know how to build it to use it right away, it gets us another step because, you know, the fact that, you know... Your next book is going to, or at least the book about the djinn, is going to talk about certain things that happened, you know, in the Vietnam experience or the Middle East and all that. For me, that strikes it for me going, see, everything kind of happens in your life, and then at one point it will come together as, you know, the puzzle will make more sense. Do you find that to be an experience within your own life?
Yeah, I do find that. And, you know, my experiences over Southeast Asia and, you know, the Near East are covered in files from the edge.
Mm-hmm.
My experiences
mm-hmm.
in the Middle East are after the military, and that's in going to be in the book called The Djinn, which is coming out in March. But the book coming out in December, which is Ultraterrestrial Contacts, is more or less from my files again, primarily dealing with contact cases.
Okay. Well, we're down to our last 2 minutes. This is, as always, a pleasure, Phil. I really enjoy speaking with you about this stuff. It you buzz me, man. My hands are buzzing. My feet are buzzing. I know the show. I think people don't know what to make of us when we get together, so they don't call in. But I know they're listening because I can feel their energy listening. So, any closing statements?
You know, there's a quote from the Djinn book.
Okay.
It said, "God made the angels from light. He made man from the mud and the clay." This is from the Quran.
Okay.
"And he made the djinn from smokeless fire." If you're going to fear anything in your life, fear the djinn.
Yeah. Oh, don't No, don't fear the djinn. I mean, you don't believe that, because the teachers that I work with, they basically say that humans are... we're the most dense. We have the least perception and the most power. Does that resonate at all for you, or?
I believe that's true, but I believe many people have given up their power, and it's like constipated from all the fears and all the material wants and everything.
I agree.
In this troubled world. And,
I agree.
I believe that human beings were once more. Very much more powerful than they are today.
Do you believe that we're on our way to becoming that again?
I believe that there are certain people who are, and some people are going to, you know, require a longer time.
Okay.
I also believe that other people, other humans, have ascended at one time, and The humans on this planet now are like almost a second race that didn't ascend, and many of us are trying to ascend to a higher plane of existence.
I agree with that as well. Also, I want to let people know, if you Google Phil, do Philip Imbrogno. It does a greater return. I just saw your name at the bottom of the book. Almost every single one of your books are written as Philip Imbrogno. So I reference you as Phil, but to Google and to get to Amazon, do Philip Imbrogno. Well, it has been an absolute divine pleasure spending this night with you. Have an amazing Beltane, whatever you do. I'll be thinking about you. Pardon?
I said I'm going to go to sleep now.
Okay, well, and if there is anything going on at any of the chambers or anything, you know, contact me because I'm interested. And as always, stay amazing, and thank you for a great interview.
Okay.
All right, I'll talk to you soon. All right, bye now. Everybody, we'll talk to you next week. Have a great week. Bye now.